The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
I got one thing to read before we bring on our guest here. I got two cats at home. You know, I like to take care of them. So Pets Life, a company that we've been partnered with, is a Minnesota pet care company that has created an oral care product for your cat or dog that is 100% natural, 100% safe, and 100% guaranteed to improve, your pet's oral health. Save hundreds in vet bills and improve your pet's health by visiting PetsLife.com. That's PetsLife.com. Enter the promo code OMAHA, as in the second part of Cold Omaha, and save 20% on every online order. Or mention OMAHA for 20% off any phone order. That's PetsLife.com, spelled with a Z. PetsLife.com. All right, we're back here for another episode of Midwest Swing after a one-week, what would you call it, Tom? A one-week...
hiatus.
Hiatus, yeah. So we took a week off. This is your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter, at Brandon_Warren. The other voice you hear so far is Tom Schreier, co-founder of Cold Omaha. You can find him on Twitter, at tschreier3. Tom, what's going on?
I'm excited for this podcast.
Yeah, this is going to be a real fun one. Again, you're listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. You can find Midwest Swing on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. You can find Cold Omaha on Twitter at Cold Omaha MN. But we have a very, very exciting show for you here and a very fun guest coming on. We've got Minnesota Twins right-hander Trevor May calling us from the West Coast. Trevor, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. Pretty well. How are you guys?
I'm doing well. I can't speak for Tom.
I'm doing well. It's the Pacific Northwest, though, right? No one considers Seattle. Do they consider the West Coast?
Yeah. I mean, I consider the West Coast.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
California is definitely the West Coast, but technically, we're on the coast.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So you had the misfortune of going to the dentist this morning. I'll ask you something a little bit better. Are you in the new house yet?
No. We move in next weekend.
Well, that's pretty exciting, and people don't know is how I got that news. You do a Twitch stream playing video games online, kind of a cool thing. And so you kind of broke the news on there, which was cool. I never thought watching somebody else play video games, especially video games that, like, I would never play World of Warcraft or anything like that, or I never have. I never thought that would be all that cool, but it seems like it's a lot of fun for not only you, but the people that watch as well.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. If you think about it objectively, it doesn't. Like, even now, I'm like, it doesn't sound... I never liked watching other people play, especially if I was in the room, because I was like, nah, now I want to play. Like,
exactly.
I want to play. I want to watch you. But it's like a great background filler, I think. I think a lot of guys, like, on my computer, I have two monitors. So, like, I put on a stream of someone playing, like, World of Warcraft, and while I'm playing. And they're doing something that I eventually want to be able to do, I guess, that's a little harder or something. And so that's how you kind of learn how to play. So that, and then there's kind of a sense of kind of community thing. You know, a lot of people go on Reddit and they feel like they're part of the Reddit community because they post all the time, that kind of stuff. And there's some people that start to show up every single time you stream, and then they're kind of like your loyal group. And then they kind of all become friends, and then they start playing the game together. And, you know, it's kind of like that. That's how the internet works. So it's kind of, it's got its finger on the pulse of the internet for sure. And then, it doesn't make sense when you think about it, but when you actually do, you're like, wow, this actually is kind of...
Trevor, by the way, is on our procedurally generated podcast every once in a while during the season, and we talk a lot about this. The 76ers, by the way, just bought two esports teams, and I think there is a lot of push to get these, you know, ESPN, for example, is putting on esports, and I think TBS just had League of Legends, so it's getting big.
Yeah, I saw that.
Well, Trevor, I want to start from the beginning for you because as someone who has not been a Twin for their entire career, I'm sure some of the stuff about when you were young Twins fans maybe don't know, but growing up in Washington, Kelso, Washington specifically, I looked and Jason Schmidt is from Kelso, it looks like, as well. Did you know much about him growing up?
Oh, yeah. He was the first guy he's the first one to make it to the big leagues out of Kelso. And he had that year where he was the finalist with Cy Young and with San Francisco, and he's kind of a I think he was a second rounder. So he's a big deal with the pride of Kelso baseball. And then since him, there was some other guys. There was a guy actually that was with the Twins for a year or two. I think he was in Triple A. I don't know if he ever got called up, but Jeff Bailey, he's also from Kelso. And he's a good friend of my family. It's not a big town. There's 12,000 people in it. So, you know, my family knows the Smiths and the Baileys. And Jeff's dad was our hitting coach in high school. Like, we're all kind of like a big family. So, I'm one of the less than a handful of guys that have made it to the big leagues from my town.
And was there any pitching influence from him to you? I mean, obviously your physical gifts are what have carried you to the big leagues as a pitcher and any of the accolades you've gotten to this point, but was there any influence there, or was it just kind of, I'm good at pitching, and so I'm going to do that?
Not really. I don't know Jason personally.
Sure.
He's older than me by, you know, 15 years or so, and he kind of did what I did, and he moved out of Kelso when he moved away, and he didn't come back. I don't think he came back and lived there in the off season much, so... Sure. You know, we didn't see him much, and for like pitching influence and stuff. Yes, I watched him. We always tried to catch his game as much as possible when I was really young. But you know, it was more of a Mariners, watching the Mariners play for me. But body wise and then stuff wise, we were very, very similar. Of 6'5", right-handed. You know, quote unquote power stuff, all that kind of stuff. So I got a lot of comps to him definitely when I was coming through.
Did you grow up a Mariners fan? And specifically, were you like a Ken Griffey Jr. fan, like pretty much everybody else that's our age and grew up in that era? Or did you gravitate to a different team or different player?
No, it was definitely, I liked the Mariners because Griffey and A-Rod and Edgar Martinez is my favorite player of all time.
Oh, really?
But I was always the guy who, like, if everyone loved one player, I wanted to find someone else that I loved. So, Edgar was kind of the unsung hero of all those really good teams they had, I think. So, him and, you know, even Jay Buhner and Randy Johnson, and even the no-name guys, the Bobby Ayala.
The
five-starter on that 116-win team, John Halama, had 16 wins. And he had like a 5 ERA.
That was my team back on World Series Baseball on Sega Genesis. So, like, I knew about, like, Mark Neufeld and Brian Terang and Rich Amaral and all those guys.
Rich Amaral, yeah. That's a good name drop right there.
Yikes.
Dan Wilson, like all these guys.
Former Minnesota Golden Gopher, Dan Wilson.
I love the Mariners growing up. And then my grandfather was stationed in Boston for a while, so he was a Red Sox fan. And of course, I was cheering for the curse to end.
Sure.
Too, when that happened. No, now they've won a bunch of times since then, so I'm a little over it. But and then my dad was an A's fan just because he was always – they were good when he was young. So
that's the way to go.
So, yeah. So I kind of stayed in the AL for sure.
So Edgar, he's a Hall of Famer in your mind then, I suppose, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, he didn't play a position for a lot of his career, and that's the only thing hurt him. The guy was an amazing hitter. I mean, he had 156 RBIs one year.
Did you have you met him now that he's the hitting coach for the Mariners?
I have. I met him. He did. They do similar to the Twins Caravan. They do Fan Fest, and they'd stop in Kelso Longview. It's like a two cities thing where I grew up.
Sure.
About 50,000 total people in the area, and that's one of the stops. It's just straight south on I-5. So I met Edgar one year that year, and I met Reggie Jackson at that somehow.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why he was with the Mariners Fan Fest, but yeah.
So in high school, you were the valedictorian. Were you naturally smart? Did you have geeky tendencies, or were you just kind of like gifted? You just show up and take the test, didn't have to study at all? What was your vibe then?
No, it was persistence and hard work. And to be honest, I was very good friends with all my teachers.
Wow.
So that sounds worse than it was, but I always made sure I knew I had everything I needed. You know, I always asked for extra help when I needed it. I was always in asking for, you know, what can I do to get this to where it needs to be, all that kind of stuff. And teachers appreciate it when you take an interest in what you're trying to do. So, and I had to study hard. Not that I wasn't bright. I don't think I wasn't ever the brightest kid in the class. I wasn't ever the that guy. But you know, when it came to numbers and stuff, I was pretty good at just kind of picking them up and doing that quick math in my head and all that kind of stuff. But other than that, like reading, writing, you know, history, I was a pretty good student, but definitely not the best one.
Was it hard then when you had, probably asked you this before, but when you had to make the decision whether to, you know, go to college or go straight through the minor leagues, did that factor in a little bit, given that you probably wanted to, or you knew you probably would get good grades in college and you enjoy class and all that?
Yeah, it was very hard. I really, really wanted to go to University of Washington. All my friends were going. I was excited. I was going to live with my best friend. We were going to do the college thing. And I was drafted lower than we thought. But in the end, and I had a full ride. I had an 80% scholarship, whatever the full baseball can get, to Washington. And then I had the rest paid academically. So I would have been completely fine. But my dad just said, I mean, do you want to go to the big leagues? I said, yes. He's like, well, why don't you start now? So that's when that decision was made. But yeah, calling my college coach and telling him I was going to sign was tough. But here I am. I guess it worked out.
So. Well, Ben Revere told me if he didn't go in the first round or the second round, that he was not going to sign. Twins took him in the first round. Right around the same time Rick Porcello was taken, did you have a round or a number, or was it just going to be a feel thing? Like, all right, if this amount feels right and if this fit feels right and all these things seem right, we're just going to go for it?
Yeah. I mean, I was told the second to fifth round, depending on the team, you know, numbers were thrown around, whatever. And to be honest, I was like smack dab in the middle.
Sure.
The last pick in the fourth round, and the money was like right in the middle of, they put up a number, we put up a number, and we met literally straight in the center. So
sounds like arbitration.
Yeah, it was like a one phone call thing. It went quick. So, but yeah, that was a tumultuous part of my life for sure. But I'm glad I made the decision to make.
I guess I didn't realize that I invoked the Ben Revere comparison when that's a player you were traded for. But that was kind of dumb on my part. But anyway, as a young player, did you play outfield as well as pitch, or were you pretty strictly a pitcher? And if you did play a position, could you hit back then?
I could hit when I was young. When I got to about 15 or 16, it's just basically when we started playing with, you know, 15 and 16-year-olds, like a year younger than you, like in high school and all that stuff, the class below me in Kelso was like all the way through. They won the they went to the Little League World Series. They won, and they went to the Babe Ruth World Series and took second 1 year. So they were really, really good. A bunch of really good class players, and they were all good position players who just needed pitching. Mm-hmm. They had some pretty solid pitchers. So I turned out to be the eighth pitcher, and then we had the field covered. A bunch of guys, tons of dudes that went and played in college, and a couple in D1. So we had a good team, and it kind of fell by the wayside. And then we realized pretty quickly that pitching was my ticket to wherever I was going. So that, and during hitting practice, I didn't have to do anything. So
nice.
That had an influence. And I was like, well, if I go to the big leagues, I won't have to hit either. Anyways, well, and if I do, it will be rare and no one will expect anything from me. So, yeah. So then, ironically, I was drafted by the Phillies. But
whoops. So you have three hits as a professional. One of them's a double. I know I had asked you about that, and you remembered basically everything about it. Do you remember all three hits?
Yeah, I remember all three hits, and they were back. It's funny, they were all back to back to back. So in those three at bats, I was 3-for-3.
Wow!
So I hit a double in a game against the Harrisburg Senators in the seventh inning. Forgot to get Mike. No, what's his name? You told me.
Yeah, I don't remember now either.
And he hadn't given up a run yet that year, and like he had like a little innings under his belt, and he gave it up to the pitcher in the seventh.
So did you roll it over the bag, or did you hit one like a gapper?
Oh, right center gap.
Nice.
Just stepped in the bucket, and he threw one right down the middle. I hit it in the gap. And then And then my next on that same road trip, we went to Richmond, Virginia, and there's a lefty throwing mid-80s out there, and I flipped one over the shortstop, and then he threw me a changeup, and I hit through the four hole. I don't know why he threw me a changeup.
To mess with you.
Yeah, so just then I went 3-for-3, and then it's funny because like later that year, the guys from Richmond, like the guys charting, told me that they said don't just lob heaters in there because I could hit, and then I like struck out like the next like 11 of the next 12 at bats or something. Yeah.
So after you sign with the Phillies, high school players go through the rookie and the low levels. There, you did have some issues with walks. But you've really come full circle with that. Each step you've taken, what steps do you take as a player to build on that? Because I feel like, there are specific things that you can easily fix. As far as maybe running faster, you just run more, or getting into shape. But command has got to be one of those things that's a little less obvious for how to work on it. What steps have made you much better in that respect?
Well, I think it came to the realization, it actually was really simple for me. I came to the realization very quickly, or not very quickly, very slowly, that my walks were caused majority of the time by my mental state than my actual physical ability. So I do have trouble repeating my delivery at times, but that's not the main cause of my control woes or my command woes. And it was always just didn't want to, I get in the 3-1 count, I get in the 2-0 count, and I just didn't want to give up a double. I didn't want to give up hits. I didn't like giving up hits. I like striking guys out, and I dropping that like high school strike guys out, walks are okay, but just don't give up hits. Be dominant, and then everyone will think you'll have potential. You know what I mean?
Sure.
That's peripheral stats right there for you.
Love it.
And the way I thought, and I had to change my thinking. So, and it really didn't change until I got to big leagues, where I was just like, I'm on the same field as this guy, and defense is just not how it works in the big leagues. Like, you strike out one an inning, you're doing it. So I kind of had to let go of it, and when I get behind and count, be okay throwing the ball over the plate, and just staying over the plate and challenging guys all the time, and just kind of putting a chip on your shoulder and saying, here it is, hit it. And then you saw that my first year, I gave up a lot of hits because I was throwing strikes. It's not like good pitches.
Would you say you walked a lot of people in high school though?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Tons. I never gave up any hits. I threw like back to back to back, no hitters, but
holy
I walked like 10 in those three games. So, I was always effectively wild. That was always, and I kind of bought into it. I think that's what kept me where I was. So, then this past year when I was on the field and when I was figuring it out, I can attribute some of my walks this year to just general not feeling good. And some of, I had a couple blow up games where I just really, the back wasn't feeling very good and I couldn't repeat my delivery. So I'm going to write those off. But, when sure. I was feeling good and throwing well and not walking guys, I was not only, throwing strikes, but I was also commanding the ball better because my brain was locked in exactly where I wanted to put a pitch instead of just throwing it over the plate, as opposed to last year and maybe the year before that. I wanted to throw it over the plate and make a good pitch more than anything. And that sounds really simple, but when you're out there and Miggy Cabrera is hitting with a guy in second, like,
oof.
You're just not like, I got to throw a strike here. You're like, I got to locate this. And it's tough to stay, keep your brain there. So and not think about what could happen. So it just takes experience and time. And I feel like when I was feeling good and when I had those brief stretches where I feel like I was healing up and getting ahead of this thing, I really started to show kind of who I'm going to be. And the walks were down, the hits were down, the strikeouts were up, and the runs were down. So I guess that's all you can ask for. I guess that's what you're trying to get.
Can you take us through your conditioning? You had mentioned kind of you do some yoga and some other methods like that. I mean, what was the thought process behind that, and who kind of introduced you to that?
Well, I've heard several guys, I've heard about guys doing yoga. There's some guys in the Phillies that really got into it. And I was like, I'm all about tailoring things to be specifically for me and having a reason for doing it. Like I said, mentally, I had trouble with walks, but also I'm a big, fairly medium coordinated guy. And I wanted to be a little bit more graceful and a little bit better at feeling my position. That was a big thing for me. But also, you know, having a good pickoff move, being able to repeat my delivery, all that stuff. Just not hurting myself in those respects, being too slow to the plate. All of those things were kind of something that I constantly had to work on. So I kind of wanted to make my body work a little better. So I got into yoga. And it wasn't, honestly, it was kind of general and not as focused as I should have been. But that's how you kind of learn, I guess, is figuring out what you need to do. So this off season, when I start up, I'm going to start up back up on Monday with the yoga. It's going to be more with a teacher a couple times a week. Coming up with a tailored plan for me, and then I'm adding Pilates as my weight training, because big thing for my back going forward will be core strength, and using relearning to use the front of my abs and my the front of my body, not my back that was compensating for everything for a long time. So it's going to be a combination of Pilates and yoga. I know this buzzword's thrown out there a lot, but Jake Arrieta does it, and whatever that dude's doing, I think I got to figure out what he's eating too.
Sure.
But, it's just, I'm committed to it, and I'm excited to see how it works. I know that when I came into spring training last year, I was in the best shape of my life, so I'm looking to repeat that.
There was a SI article on Arrieta, wasn't there? Like, about what he was doing and whatnot? You should look it up. I'm sure it's all out there.
Yeah. I know he has a Pilates instructor. I've seen all the stuff on him, and Pilates is pretty universal. I don't think he's doing anything crazy that's different than most Pilates instructors teach. It's amazing. It really is amazing stuff. I had a trainer in Minnesota when we were during rehab that we were trying to work on a program. I had to take a step back to let the back heal before I started doing this. But she basically put me through a couple workouts, and I was like, this is something I've never done before, and it's very hard. It looks stupid, but it's very, very hard.
So, no, go ahead.
Oh, you're good. You're good.
So, going through your minor league, time coming up, you made before 2012. You're on a number of top prospects lists. Is that the kind of thing a young player is consciously aware of as far as their stock?
They're absolutely lying if they say no.
Did you know you were the number 69 prospect for Baseball America that year?
Oh yeah, I knew I was that. I knew I was number one for the Phillies. And didn't get invited to big league camp, and I was a little jaded because I was the number one prospect, not invited to big league camp.
Sure.
A bunch of stupid stuff like that. And I took that into the season with me, like I had something to prove here. When do those things matter? No, they don't. Not even remotely. Now that I've been up and been around for a while, like, wow, no one cares. Now, it really doesn't matter until you get here. So,
your first year at AA was in the Philly system, and then when you were traded, you spent a year with the Twins. Double A system as well, a Double A team as well. Take us through that first year at Double A for you, because there was, I think, it looks like, at least in the numbers, a bit of an adjustment period to making that jump. Would that be an accurate statement?
Yeah, there is. But like I said, that was the year that I was given that prospect status, something that I always cared about when I was young. I always cared about velocity and strikeouts and prospect status and who I was going to be and all this stuff. And I took that in the season, and then I let it snowball on me because I didn't have the mental equipment to kind of deal with failing kind of like on a big scale like that when I was supposed to be in the big leagues by the end of the year. And I just wasn't ready to go. Like tons of walks, tons of homers. Like I said, I don't want to give up hits here. Oh no, I gave up a homer again. Oh, I need to not give up hits now. Oh, I'm a walk guy. Now I'm out in the second. And it was a lot of that. And then towards the end of the year, I made a decision that I'm tired of this and I'm going to make the mental changes I need to make. So, and I found it a little bit. And then, the next year, the same thing kind of snowballed on me. I was a little bit, let it snowball, and I caught it a little bit again at the end of the year. And then I started in 2014, like, this is, I'm not reverting back to those horrible outings where I lose it mentally and I can't get it back. I'm going to be there mentally and I had a good year.
Was there any benefit for you to pitching in the Eastern League for a second straight year, even though you switched teams?
Yeah, I mean, I needed that kind of struggle to help me make the changes I need to make. I'm glad things weren't easy for me all the way up until the big leagues, and then I struggled there. I'm glad I struggled in the minors first, for sure.
Did you have any indication that you were going to be traded?
Indication, no. Hunch, yeah. I dodged about 17 trades that the Phillies made over those 5 years. And then I just didn't have a good year. So I was like, oh, I'm on the block now. Like, my stock dropped, so I'm out. And sure enough, on the morning, 7 a.m. that morning, I actually received a call from Terry first, and then like 2 hours later, Ruben Romero called me. So I'm like, oh, I know I'm traded, man.
they tell you you're going to Minnesota. What do you know about Minnesota? What is your first thought when you're thinking, oh, man, Minnesota?
Well, I'm a pretty honest guy, so I'm going to be honest with you. I was like, wow, they didn't have a good year, and they don't have much starting pitching.
So, that's good for you. That's a good thing for
good,
you, right?
Good, yeah, good opportunity for me. I was going to miss basically the Phillies organization. I was like, I'm going to miss the guys, you know, but it's time to move on. I was actually kind of excited to get a blank slate. I needed that, kind of. I think that's very similar to something maybe I think Alex Meyer is going to be a great pitcher, but he might have needed a blank slate with another team. And he's kind of taking advantage of that. I think that's very similar to something that what happened to me in 2012.
You brought up Terry Ryan's name, obviously no longer the GM of the Twins. What was your relationship like with him for the must have been, you know, parts of four seasons that you were under his tutelage or under his team's with the team, I guess.
Well, Terry's very, very honest, for sure. You don't know whether or not to laugh when he makes a joke. Cause it's
I can totally relate to that.
Yeah.
The smile is rare. Terry was, when he called me, he said, you know, you got a lot of minor league innings. And he did give me a shot. And, he was a major part of me getting to the big leagues and giving me an opportunity to kind of progress in my career. He pushed me forward into AAA when I didn't necessarily numbers wise earn it. Other guys pitched better than me that year, he believed in me, and you gotta recognize that fact. I owe him a lot. He had a long run here,
right.
He is and is a well respected baseball guy throughout the whole baseball community. So. Just like any other, it's a really tough job being the GM, and people can point at any decision made and make a case either way, pretty much every time. So, but I commend him on his ability to kind of. He was really good at just not listening to it. He's really good at it. I don't know if I could do what he did. So, big impact in my career.
So you rewarded his loyalty, pushing you to AAA. You obviously had a very nice year at Rochester in 2014, resulting in you getting to the big leagues for a cup of coffee over the last, I think, 2 months or so. What was your welcome to the big leagues moment with the Twins that season?
Oh, well, my welcome to the moment was walking five guys in my second inning, I think.
In Oakland, right?
Yeah, good day. Josh Donaldson remembers that night, because I don't think I've gotten him out since.
Most people haven't, in your defense.
Oh, yeah, nobody has. I'm not, if there was a guy that's going to get you every time, you might as well have it be him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My welcome to the big leagues moment, honestly, was just going to take the ball that day and just being so nervous. They're like, everyone told me 2 weeks later, like, dude, you look terrible on the warming up. Like, we were like, he's got no chance. He's so nervous. And I had no chance. But you know, it was a little bit. Took me 3 or 4 times to kind of be okay with throwing the ball over the plate and knowing that, getting used to the laces on the ball. Everyone says that, but it's true. You do got to get used to it. But I was welcomed pretty well, pretty good, pretty open arms. And I had two big league spring trainings. Everyone knew me, mm-hmm. you know. And I competed for a spot earlier that year. So it was pretty easy transition. Nothing crazy really happened to me. You know, to be honest, this group of guys isn't really the big, it's a rookie, let's do this with a type group of guys.
That has to be nice.
It's nice to an extent, but at the same time, you, like, wish we would do it more, I guess.
Especially now that you're not a rookie.
Yeah, now that I'm not a rookie. But you know, guys are like, oh, I wish, like, it doesn't even mean hazing, just, like, buying a guy's suit or something. And I think we actually had some guys start to do that again a little bit more this year. You know, with kind of Morneau was a guy who would do things like that, just the unwritten rule type stuff. A lot. But it's kind of starting to come back into play. But to be honest, if everyone pitched in and we got every rookie a suit, we would have all been broke this year because we had so many rookies. So,
do you and Tyler Duffy ever joke about who had the better first start?
After his start, I went up to him and whispered in his ear, mine was still worse.
Really? Yeah, people don't remember it was Duffy in Toronto. But he, you know what? He turned it around pretty good. You obviously did as well, you know, each in your own time. So you've worked, though, as a starter and a reliever. What are the positives for each role for you so far?
Well, personally for me, I enjoy relieving. I enjoy relieving for the rush of getting out there taking with like a one-run lead. And knowing that your margin of error is really small and just going right after guys, I successfully going out for an eighth inning and like a 1-2-3 inning in the 3-2 game is just a phenomenal feeling. And I really love being there in high pressure situations and getting the adrenaline going and kind of just locking in. I feel like that's where all the work mentally I've done over the past few years has really shined, especially last year. And as a starter, I love eating innings. And now that I've been a reliever, I have a huge appreciation for a starter going deeper into a game and how I killed bullpens all through my minor league career. I hope I'm given that opportunity to go back and do that. And then I think I made strides game plan-wise, and analyzing hitters, analyzing how I'm going to be successful for, like, several times through a lineup. I think I did a lot of work even when I wasn't able to pitch as much this year in those areas. So I think I made a huge stride in going forward, you know, using the inside part of the plate, not shying away from it, and then going away when I need to go away. I think that's something Irvin did so well for the last 3 months of the season, and his season showed you kind of those results. And moving forward, it's just kind of repeating those kind of things. So I love doing both. I love pitching, I think, in general. Ideally, I'd love to be the Bumgarner guy who goes out and throws starts, and 3 days later he's in the bullpen just in case you need me for 3 innings. Like, I would love to be that. That would ideally would be my situation.
Are you excited, though, this off season to work on a transition back to the rotation to compete for a role next year? I mean, is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to go get it. I'm going to go take that role because, you know, it's been a few. To be honest, every spring training I go in, and I'm you know, quote-unquote, competing for something with 15 other guys every time. And I'm just kind of, I'm a little bit over it. I've been around long enough now, I think. Going to go into my 3-plus year next year, hopefully, that it's just kind of time for me to go, if I want and if I need to do something, if I think I can do something, to go take it and do it. You know, there's a while there where I was happy to be here type. I hope I have a job, but it's I think that if every guy on the team goes, I'm going to take this job, this is my job, and I'm locking it down, and we're going to win this thing, I think that's something that we need, that fire, a little bit more going into next year, because I think I speak for all of us when I say 59 and 103 can't happen again.
How do you process a season like that now? I mean, individually, and I know I don't want it to sound like you are just talking about yourself, because everybody knows how the season went for the team. But for you personally, outside of the injuries, you know, the ERA was a little high, but still plenty of strikeouts. You know, the walk rate, not all that troublesome. When you were healthy, you pitched very well. I think you had a 12-appearance stretch where you didn't give up a run. And when you were who you needed to be, you were obviously a dominant late-inning reliever. How do you process that as a human being, as a pitcher, you know, when you evaluate the season and get ready to move on?
Like I said, I try to see the strides I made in those specific areas that necessarily aren't me being on the field. Things that I wanted to progress in going into the year, had I been healthy, and I wasn't healthy, but I'd still be able to make strides in it. And then kind of put the stuff that, like the ERA and stuff, I can say, you know, this and that, it was high and whatever, but judging by how I felt, how often I was out there, like, trying so hard to throw a ball somewhere and my body physically wouldn't let me do it. You know, it's I don't want to disregard it, but there's just so many things that are inflated because of things that I thought were in my control that weren't. And you just take the positives and then move forward. Because, like you said, I had two or three stretches of 5, 6, 7, 8 outings where, you know, nothing. I just didn't give up anything. Got a couple holds and was working my way back into that late inning lockdown guy. And then, you know, I have a setback, and it was a very frustrating year in those respects. But I saw who I was, and that this is a level I can pitch and be very dominant and very, very valuable at. And that view of myself hasn't changed at all, even with a year like this. But and you see guys like this happen all the time. Like they have Robinson Cano last year, he had a nagging injury that he tried to play through for a lot of time. And when we played against him, when he came to Target Field, we're like, that guy looks like he just can barely hold a bat.
What about Alex Gordon this year?
Alex Gordon this year, just when you can't swing full on and without tweaking something, you don't realize that you've compensated. You're not going to hit the ball consistently. Trevor Plouffe was nagging injuries all year. And he was constantly trying to get back, and then he started to feel healthy. Actually, to be honest, Plouffe had a very similar year to me.
He must be a Trevor thing. Back,
he started to feel real good for 2 weeks, and then he'd pull, tweak an oblique or something. Like, what is going on? It's just, if your hand hurt, like, don't be surprised if Byung-ho's hand has been hurting him all year. And that could contribute to the high strikeout numbers and the not being able to make an adjustment. Like, those things, people don't honestly know about those things. They just know about the injury when it happens, you know, when they actually announce it. And they don't know how long he's had it or if it's been, like, nagging him all year. So I used to be like, oh, you know, honestly, I would be like, oh, he hasn't thrown well lately, and now he's hurt. Well, maybe he was hurt the whole time. Maybe I was hurt the whole time. Maybe, sure. Maybe a guy's out there just like he doesn't want to go on the DL because a lot of times that's a death sentence for a big leaguer, especially when he doesn't have that much time or a lockdown role on the team, and they just don't want to go down. And you see that a lot. So, and I was like that for a while. Like, I need to stay healthy because that's the most important thing. And then I'd kid myself that I was healthy. I wasn't. So I take that forward and know that, you know, I wasn't healthy all year. And then make my number one priority healthy, and then go back to being who I am.
All right, we got some listener questions and a quick lightning round, and we can get you on your way. Paula Manel wants to know, do you believe they've found the true root of your issues, and are you on track to healing? And now I know that you and I have discussed this in the clubhouse, but it sounds like that's the case. Where are you at in your healing, and how confident do you feel that you're ready to move forward?
Well, when I talked to Dr. Watkins, he told me it's a very common issue. I've even talked to other guys. Andrew Albers has had a power parse defect in his back also before. And the rehab program is a 99% success rate. So, you know, I just think that how I am is like taking 9 days or a week off from the old back is just not enough. So I'm giving myself almost a month of literally no throwing activities, no anything. And just kind of the maximum work I'm doing is going for a walk, moving around a little bit, just trying to go outside and walk somewhere instead of driving there, and just moving around, and then kind of just letting everything reset, getting back to kind of like completely out of shape mode. It's funny as that sounds, but completely out of shape mode, and then just so that the back isn't constantly trying to work, and then and rebuilding all those muscles around it, and on top of all that, letting the bone heal. And I feel like that's going to make the difference, because I think last year my bone healed, but I had all of the bad habits that were going to cause it again. So that's why all the hammering on it again caused it to work, go again on me. So that includes back adjustments and all that stuff. Make sure everything's in line, make sure the body works exactly like it should be. And I think that it should go away like nothing happened.
Yeah, I can relate to your completely out of shape mode comment, though. So, whoops. no, that's that all makes sense. Corey Engelhart wants to know, how is your off-season training different based on the role you expect to have in the upcoming season, like from pit starter to reliever?
The only difference, the only big difference is the length of my throwing sessions when I get going. And just the amount of conditioning I'll do. I'll do a little bit longer, lighter, but I'll try to, like, stretch out my running and stuff when I come into the season. And then workouts-wise, honestly, it'll be very similar. But routine, I can get on a more of a solid routine going into the season instead of just trying to keep something really light every day. I can actually have those 4 days where I know that I can work really hard and stuff. So yeah, it's good to be. Other than that, you know, there's not a lot of differences.
Robert Trims wants to know, do you prefer relieving or starting? I think you've kind of touched on that so far, but just to reiterate.
Starting. Again, I'd be kidding you and lying if I said that the fact that starting pitchers are paid astronomically more than relieving pitchers is not a factor, because, you know, just like any person in their career, if you are progressing through your career, you'd like to put yourself in the best financial position that you possibly can be in.
Of course.
Then that is a factor, obviously. But at the same time, I think that, you know, people say that being moved to reliever is a demotion. And that's kind of a loaded word, I think. But because the value there is statistically different, but intrinsically, like in a game, it's very close. And I think that I think that I can start, and I think that I have the ability to be a guy that a team can lean on. I think that's what I want more than anything, is a guy that my teammates can trust to get the job done every fifth day, and go out there. And I think that I'm durable enough. Back issue aside, I'm durable enough to throw 200 plus innings in a year and throw 30 plus starts in a year and take the ball in the playoffs in November, get all the way to November healthy, full blown arm ready to go, with bullets to spare at the end of the year. And I believe I can do it. So that's what I want
to
do.
To that end, as far as value goes, do you think that there's any logical reason to vote for Zach Britton as Cy Young winner this year?
I mean, this is the same argument we're having when Justin Verlander won the MVP.
Right.
It's insane. Like, remember Wade Davis a year ago when he had a one? We were like, oh, he's the most amazing start relieving pitcher. The dude's given up two runs, like two.
Mm-hmm.
What? Or maybe three now.
Yeah, sure. For the whole season, though, it's
0.55. Yeah, you've given up three runs. The thing is, if you're going to go based on how impressive is the season, you got to go on everything. So you got to go on strikeouts, hits given up, like complete dominance, not just ERA.
Right.
And unfortunately, he throws sinkers.
Ground balls, man.
And he gets the swinging bunts instead of the strikeouts. But he's not going to win it. But again, if he might, because to be honest, the starting pitching, there's not that real standout guy in starting pitching.
Yeah, Chris Sale didn't have a Chris Sale year. Max Scherzer's in the National League now. There wasn't that one guy who went off. I mean, Rick Porcello, not a strikeout guy, won 20-some-odd games. You know, certain guys, David Price didn't have a David Price year. So it's his best possible chance in terms of like a perfect storm of circumstances around him.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say this is the year to do it if it's going to do it. Yeah, sure.
So Mike Shockman wants to know, what was your first splurge on a MLB paycheck?
I had two bucket list things that I wanted to do when I that offseason after I got called up. One was send my dad to the World Series of Poker.
Nice.
He has declined the World Series of Poker, and he would like to be in the senior World Series of Poker.
Cool.
So because it's a lot shorter, and it's 3 days instead of a week, and he's like, I'm 60, so I'm going to be tired. So
sure.
I want to do something a little easier. But he's going, so that's checked off. And then I bought my turntables, my
nice.
Pioneer CDDJ 2000 turntables in the offseason between 14 and 15. And they were – I've never been so excited to get something in my life.
Matt Dillon wants to know who your top three DJs are, which is a nice tie-in here. If for people who don't know, you do – to dumb it down as far as I can, you do music. So he wants to know who your top three DJs are. I want to know who your musical influences are.
My top three DJs.
And what's your DJ name? I forget.
It's just my name now.
It was Mazer, right?
Mazer. It's been funny. Gardy used to call me Mazer and didn't know that was my DJ name. It's funny.
Wow.
But DJ name. I haven't DJed live in a year and a half, but my top three DJing skills wise, there's three guys that I like that actually like live mix and kind of make it up as they go. One guy's his name's Laidback Luke. He is a Dutch DJ and great dude, and every time I tweet him, he's got almost a million followers. Every time I tweet him, he tweets me back when I have a question. So
nice.
The dude loves his fans, always talk to him. And he's just really awesome show. I've seen him twice. There's another guy who's a world champion DJ named DJ Craze. A lot of people may have heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Who plays a lot of my music, but also like hip hop. And he like uses vinyls and scratches and is very, very, very skilled. And then another guy, A-Track, who's another guy who live mixes and scratches and is a world champion turntablist who also produces more pop, electronic, sometimes hip-hop, sometimes all kinds of stuff. He's just always whatever tickles his fancy. Musical influences. There's two things I love in songs. Now, if it's electronic music, it's very like a very complex melody into a very simple beat. Catchy, simple beat is like my, every time I hear that, I'm like, ooh, I wasn't expecting that. I love that. That's something I look for in like house music. And then on the flip side, on like rock and stuff, if you have power vocals, if you are like a really strong vocalist, I love Sia's voice.
Mm-hmm.
I love every Queen song ever because of Freddie Mercury.
Amazingly talented person.
Florence Welch from Florence and the Machines. I love her voice. Adele, obviously.
Yep.
Sam Smith. They have very unique voices. Ariana Grande, her stuff's super poppy, but like people do remixes of her songs into electronics. Music or vocals are always very, very good. So I look for like super. There's another Jasmine Thompson has really, really cool vocals too. So I like all that stuff too. So
where can we find your stuff? Is it SoundCloud or is there a better place to find it online?
SoundCloud, Trevor May on SoundCloud. I think I'm the top one. I haven't produced a song since last off season, but actually, I have a guy that I'm working with on one right now.
Nice.
To do a collaboration. He's actually like having a go at this thing. He has quite a few productions out. So that, on top of the game streaming, is kind of what I'm doing. My believe it or not, my off season schedule daily is pretty dang full. So.
Andrew Brisgornia, this is the last listener question before we do the quick lightning round. He wants to know if you'll sleep on his couch. He has he'll provide the cat, but he can't promise that the couch will be good for lumbar support.
No, I won't sleep on the couch.
Okay, I figured it wouldn't, but you know he wanted to throw that in there, and I appreciate listener questions. I want to thank everybody for sending those in. So we do have the lightning round. This is I want to go over the pitching staff, and I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions, a series of questions. You answer who they are on the pitching staff. Only one caveat, and you can tell me if you think that you are the right answer, but I want to know who it is besides you, okay?
Okay.
Who is the best dressed on the Minnesota Twins pitching staff?
Ted Dean.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
he won the award that Dustin Morse tweeted out the other day,
yeah.
So that's a good answer. Who is the best athlete?
Ooh, Brandon Kinster is a pretty dang good athlete.
Former BMXer too. We uncovered at one point from Colin Cowherd had interviewed him back in the day.
Well, that's super surprising. and then Ryan Presley is a pretty good athlete. Duffy. The non-athletes are me.
I feel like Tonkin wouldn't be a great athlete. Is that
Tonk? No. Tonk, I'm sorry if you hear this, dude. But who's kidding? Me and you are not the people. We're chosen last for dodgeball. And then, not dodgeball, I guess. But anything else.
You kill people in dodgeball.
Exactly. Ryan O'Rourke, he tries great. Okay, the guy's got the best. He's got the best endurance and effort.
Mm-hmm.
He gets the A for effort. He's the most. He tries the hardest to be the most athletic. Let's say that.
When you played dodgeball back in the day, like in high school, would the ball rise on you? Like you'd throw it at someone's waist and you just catch them right in the face?
Yes.
Obviously. Yeah. When I played with a kid who pitched for us who threw like 84, which is not that great. But yeah, it was risers all day long, and he was constantly getting in trouble. And he's like, there's nothing I can do about this. Who's the most talented outside the game of baseball?
Oh.
Whether it's music, it could be anything. Singing, whatever.
Pitching staff. Most talented.
I mean, I know Brian Dozier is a pretty good singer. He plays guitar. You could cop out with that. He doesn't pitch.
Yeah,
but
he plays guitar and he sings, but voice quality.
So he's like the guy on the quad at college that's playing and the girls flock around. And you're like, what is up with this guy?
Yeah. Oh, you know what? You know, Dozier hit 40 homers this year. He's got a great voice.
There you go. It's like the gold glove for Rafael Palmeiro the year he played 20 games at first base.
Stole DeAndre Hopkins from me too in fantasy football. Anyway,
ouch.
Whatever. That dude played like 12 points this year.
Plays the Vikings next week.
Yeah, he ain't gonna score next week either.
Nope.
So anyway, best talented pitcher besides me. I mean, I'm interested in a lot of things. I'm not even gonna say I'm super talented. I'm just like I do a lot of stuff. Honestly, I think Duffy talked about playing guitar at some point. I think. I honestly, I don't know. That's a lie. Ryan O'Rourke's pretty talented. He's a pretty talented conversationalist.
Yeah.
He's
saw
great.
Man, I'm trying to think. Nobody does really much. we don't really talk a lot about like what we do off the field.
So, okay. Well, we can move on to the next one. Who is the most annoying?
Most annoying.
Even if it's just like to talk to, you know, like annoying voice. It could be a person that's always trying to mess with you.
Press always unties my shoes when I'm sitting there.
Rude.
What's more annoying than that? Well, it was funny. It'd be on the he'd fall asleep on the flight, and then I'd have tie his shoes. So let's just say, yeah, we're annoying to each other. Yeah.
That's good. Who's the funniest?
Tonk is like, I don't know what it is about Michael Tonk, but he gets me, man.
He's goofy.
I've actually noticed that too. He doesn't seem like he's doing a lot like to mess with people, but I feel like he's just low key hilarious.
Well, low key one liners.
Who's the most
out of nowhere?
Who's the most competitive? And I know that if I'd asked you this at the beginning of the season, I would have guessed it would have been Casey Fien.
Ryan O'Rourke.
Really?
Really?
Casey Fien's got nothing on O'Rourke. Are you kidding me? Have you seen Ryan O'Rourke shag in the outfield?
No, it's too far from the press box. I'll have to come out and watch sometime.
He's the dude running into the wall.
Man.
He's not on the DL once. He bruised a rib running into the wall.
God damn.
Who?
He's crazy.
Who has the worst haircut?
Ooh.
Oh, Taylor Rogers.
Are you a fan of JT Shagwa's flow?
Yeah.
Okay, that's
He's not a fan. The only person bigger fan of me than JT's hair is JT. That's for sure.
Who's the most low key?
Most low key.
Yep.
Raj.
I could see that. Yeah. All right. Last one.
No, it's either Roger or Bushiers, Buddy. But they're pretty chill.
Oh, I like Buddy a lot, actually. I hope he gets a chance to play for the Twins next year. He had a nice year outside of the ERA, and he really did some good things. I hope they give him a long look. The last one and my favorite one, and I think I know the answer. Who would be your WWE tag team partner?
Who would be my WWE? Are we going, like, sentimental here? Are we going, like, I actually want to win?
Let's do both. Who are you going to own folks with, and then who are you going to have the best time with?
I mean, it would be either Tommy or Presley for, like, having fun with. And then if we were wrestling other guys on the team, say, like, our team was the only, like, the pool of guys we could pick and we had to wrestle on the team. I mean, I would pick Miguel.
Right, of course.
Obviously.
Yeah. Then I just stay away from the ropes so he couldn't tag me.
That's a good pick. Is there a pitcher that would own other people? Like, I know Cal Ripken Jr. back in the day used to just wreck people when they would wrestle in the clubhouse. Is there a pitcher that you think could do that?
Well, if he were still with the Twins, it'd be Mike Pelfrey. But
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
But I'd go with O'Rourke. The dude's a bulldog, man. I think he would see red and just know when we all stop.
Irish blood.
You guys would wear Zubas to the ring, I bet, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, hey, Tom's got one thing before we let you go.
Real quick, World Series pick. Do you have an opinion here?
World Series pick. I'm a big curse ending guy.
Ooh.
Maybe the Cubs win it. But, guys. 2016, and the San Francisco Giants are in the playoffs. So
yeah, it's an even year. It is an even year,
and they're in a wild card, which almost guarantees it.
Well, Trevor, this is absolutely great. We really enjoyed you having on. I don't speak for you in saying that I had a good time, but hopefully we can have you on again sometime.
Yeah, man,
really appreciate it. Thanks to Trevor May. This has been Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.